Good morning. I'm Robin Cohen from the Keck University of Southern California School of Medicine. And the topic of today's roundtable is the consequences of refusing surgery. We have a very distinguished panel, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves.
I'm Mark Allen, a thoracic surgeon at the Mayo Clinic, and I do primarily general thoracic surgery.
I'm Alan Speer. I'm an adult cardiac surgeon in Virginia at the Inova Health System.
I'm Seaburn Harrison. I'm also a general thoracic surgeon in New York.
There have been at least two papers presented at the 54th annual meeting of the Society of Thoracic Surgeons that have shown that surgical therapy can be superior or is superior to alternate approaches. This has been shown both in esophageal cancer and in coronary bypass surgery patients with coronary artery disease under the age of 50. So, Seaburn, as somebody who did the esophageal study, tell us, knowing some of this information, why would patients not opt for what we feel to be the best therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a few reasons. One is that, I mean, undeniably, it is a lot for a patient to go through. It's a surgery that takes place in the abdomen, in the chest, and then also sometimes in the neck. So it's just a lot for a patient to go through. And so it's sometimes hard when a patient hears that to weigh the short-term difficulty of going through a difficult operation with the long-term option for what we hope is cancer cure. It's hard for them to balance that. I think, you know, the other things is that a lot of times these patients come in and they're very symptomatic. They have a tumor in their esophagus. It's hard for them to swallow. It's hard for them to eat. And then they get chemotherapy and radiation and the symptoms go away. And they say, well, if my symptoms are gone and it looks like the cancer's possibly gone, then why do I need to go through an esophagectomy? And so for that reason, they may opt out of it. So I think there's a couple of things that are at play there.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Mark, you spent your career treating patients with esophageal disease. You understand the research. You know what's best for them. You give your experience to a patient and he opts for non-surgical therapy. What's your strategy there? Is that a patient who's acting against medical advice? Is it somebody who needs to be coaxed? What's your strategy when the patient says, thanks, doc, but no thanks?
Yeah, well, I think it's a natural reaction when a patient, you give a recommendation after you spend some time looking at that patient, examining them, and you give them a recommendation and they say, no, I don't like your recommendation. So the first natural instinct is to be upset with the patient. You have to sort of fight that instinct and figure out what's best for the patient. And maybe your recommendation is wrong because there's factors you don't know about or you don't understand what's going on in their social life or their family. So you kind of step back and make sure that they understand the operation. Be honest with them what it's going to be, you know, what the operation is, how long it's going to take to recover. Don't sort of sugarcoat it. Try to be honest and open and tell them. And oftentimes it helps to get other family members involved, their wife or their spouse or their kids, because they also have to, you know, unlike us when we see the patient in the hospital, they have to deal with the patient basically for the rest of their lives. So they're an important factor, input into the decision of whether to have surgery or not. It's an important thing. And usually patients will come to some sort of reasonable decision. It's a little special in esophageal surgery because you sort of have a short window when you can do the operation. And after that, if they say no and then they change their mind 6 months later, it's a much more difficult operation. So that's another thing to emphasize to the patient and their family, that this is the time to discuss this and make the right decision. And for some patients, not having surgery is the right decision, despite the fact it's not going to have as good a cure rate. They just don't want to go through it. And you really need to have patient participation in their recovery. So they do have to agree to say, yes, this is a good idea, and I want to have this operation.
Do you think that it's the obligation of the surgeon to try to change their mind?
No, I think it's the obligation of the surgeon to give them the information and make sure they understand that information. There's no way a patient could possibly know all the statistics and data and have the experience that we've had for all our training about all the pros and cons of having surgery. But you have to give them so they can make the best informed decision as they can. Mm-hmm. And they may not come up with the same, you know, answer that I come up with. But I try to give them as much information as I can and make sure they understand it and clear up their misunderstandings. You know, oftentimes they've gone on the internet and they've read a bunch of horrible stories about esophageal surgery. And you sort of admit, yes, those do happen, but that's the minority of patients. Most patients do pretty well and have a meaning, a good quality of life once they're done.
So, Alan, I'm seeing the emergence of a couple of sort of a new paradigm. I think the traditional one is that as surgeons, patients are referred to us for surgery. We tell them about the operations, the risks and benefits. We recommend them, and, you know, that sort of becomes the dance. What about the other? There's also a paradigm where everybody weighs in with their option. Let's say it's PCI, percutaneous coronary intervention versus coronary bypass surgeon, where the cardiologist has given the patient what he can do for them. He can also talk about medical therapy, and then you come in to say what you have to offer from a surgical standpoint. So is that where we're going, where everybody says what's available and we let the patient decide, or should we still be making strong recommendations knowing that there are big advantages to bypass surgery, survival advantages, freedom from MI? What do you think?
I think I approach this probably comparably to what Dr. Allen has said. I'm a strong believer and an advocate of the patient autonomy. And their directive to me, to surgeons, in my belief, is live longer, live better. What can I do to provide that for them? And I think that my obligation to them is to make sure that in my informed consent process that I have delivered this with the best from my experience, evidence-based guidelines, and to be as unbiased as possible. I think all of us in our humanness have opinions. I try, when I have such opinions, to make sure that that is documented, that I've really made that clear to them of what my belief is based on the data. But after saying that, the patients need to use that opinion and that data as to their best of their ability to make the decision that's the right thing for them. And even if I don't agree with that response, that is what they've decided is the best thing for them. And I don't want to belabor it, but the caveat to that is that in cardiothoracic surgery, there are those disease entities where timing is of some concern. And the clinical state of the patients is of significance. Specifically, in the bulky aneurysms in the elderly, we know that the results can be obtained electively far better than in the urgent and catastrophic occurrence, where we know that the potential for salvage is very low. I then follow up, if the patient has decided to not go forth with the standard recommendation, to understand that if there is a catastrophe that occurs, the results of emergency surgery are such that it shouldn't be offered in that setting, and then I try to state we will document that in the medical record. We will get a bracelet for them that notifies that an aneurysm is known, do not operate, emergently. And at least in our patient population, this has served us well over decades.
So, bluntly speaking, that's almost like an I told you so clause. Mark, you've got a patient, he's early stage esophageal cancer. I think that there's a strong chance of curing him with an operation. He decides not to have an operation and then comes back later having failed other therapy. And the question is he now a surgical candidate?
Yeah.
It puts us in a tight spot.
It does.
Where do you go with that?
It does. I mean, first of all, you have to be supportive of the patient's decision. You can't sort of, you know, look down upon the patient or criticize their decision, because really it's a biologic system. Nobody knows what's the right answer. A lot of variables. We don't have all the answers. I think when they come back in a situation like that, you have to explain to them, yes, we could do an operation now. The risks now are much higher as long as you're willing to accept that risk and it's feasible that they have a reasonable chance to get better from the operation, you would go ahead and offer them an operation. And, you know, things may have changed in their situation. I think it's a tough, you know, sitting on the other side of the table in the patient's shoes, you know, if you're feeling fine and you're doing great, it's hard to say, yes, I want to have a great big operation. Mm-hmm. But when your cancer comes back and now you're looking at the fact, wow, I'm only going to live another 3 or 4 months, you might change your opinion and say, okay, now let's have a big operation. So you have to sort of be in the patient's shoes a little bit and understand where they're coming from.
But I think the bottom line still is that even though we may not have agreed with their decisions up front, that unless, you know, there's been an agreement made when that aneurysm ruptures, we're going to decide not to do anything, that we're going to be with them and always do the best thing that we can, no matter what. So let me ask you, you've given the patient your expertise, your conviction, you've made your recommendation, and the patient says, no thanks. What as surgeons, what as physicians do we have to do to protect ourselves? Let's say the patient goes on to have a bad outcome and suddenly they're looking at us saying that we didn't describe it to them well enough. We didn't give them the information in the right way. We should have been more forceful in our recommendations. Are we in trouble from a legal standpoint? What should we do, Alan, to protect ourselves in that situation?
I think that the obvious answer is the documentation in the medical record, but I think practically in the setting of the difficult discussion in the higher risk patients, with the stakes being as they are and trying to respect their decision and be supportive, when there are potential for adverse outcomes, I make sure in our practice that we get family members, friends, who as many as we can in the room to help as a community make sure that everyone understands. The problems that has been, at least with us, is in the urgent setting where it's only the patient by themselves, and then there's a distant relative that has not been part of the conversational dynamic, and that there's misunderstandings that can occur from that. So in as best we can, we try to have either by phone or in person, through interpreters or whatever it takes, some family and friends support, that they are all hearing the same dialogue.
Sebrin, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I would totally echo everything that was said. And I think with esophageal cancer, a lot of times there are also a lot of other physicians that are involved. You've got oncologists, you've got radiation oncologists. And so if you have a decision where the treatment plan was to do trimodality therapy, chemo, radiation, followed by surgery, and then after the induction therapy, the patient decides not to have surgery, clearly you want to do your documentation. But I think that's a good opportunity to try to bring your colleagues in as well. Maybe they've established a different relationship with you. Bring your oncologist in, bring the radiation oncologist to talk to the patient, to say what the recommendations are. And I think if, as a treatment team, you've documented this was our recommendation, the patient chose to do elsewhere, you have a little bit more protection.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
I sometimes, too, will do a kind of a second look, so to say, and maybe call the patient back a couple of days or a week later just to kind of revisit, let some time go by, let them sleep on that decision for a while, talk to their family members, mm-hmm. and just to make sure that they're happy with that, the decision that we came to.
So I think that's key, and I think that it's important that patients understand that we're going to support them in what they choose, knowing that that's their decision. At the same time, I will frequently tell them, just for clarity, you know, let me again state what my recommendation was, and that's something that I'm going to document in the record and in the record that I send to your referring physicians.
Yes, Robin, Alan. One point I would make as an adjunct to this is that there have been not infrequently differences of opinion between the referring doctor and the surgeon, where they are adamant that a particular procedure be performed. The patient is reluctant to have such a procedure, and we, in deference to that, will be supportive of the patient. But it's the interaction between us and the cardiologist for my specialty. And it can often be not quite as is clear, not quite as accepted, because the cardiologist views themselves as, well, what am I going to do now? They're going to come back with repeated angina, repeated congestive heart failure, and you've really left me holding it. But yet the true coordination within the care delivery model to be supportive of that patient, regardless of, as Dr. Allen alluded to, the sequelae, is really our number one goal in my estimation. But sometimes those conversations are not as perhaps facile or as agreeable as we would think in the comfort of this discussion.
That's true. Hence the beauty of the trials, you know, the beauty of the studies that are actually coming out, you know, reinforcing the benefits of surgery over, you know, certainly other traditional therapies and certainly things that are involving. Well, I want to thank all of you for your expert opinions. It's been a great discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.